Well, let's call the meeting to order. Let the record show that everybody except for Ally is here. It's a record for us having this many people.
Free food.
We have a motion to approve the minutes. Rem so moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any additions or corrections that anybody wants to make to the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Any abstentions? Miranda? Okay. Clark County Public Health. Chuck?
I'll start with a couple of quick updates and then I guess other updates, and then we'll go to the discussion of Circle C after that. Just real quick, two only announcements I think at this point. One is, Melissa, who's our primary solid waste person on inspections, contact response, she's going to be on maternity leave probably. There's a pool, so we don't know exactly what date, but you know, I'm hoping for June 3rd at 10 p.m. I think is my entry. But anyway, she's been taking some time off through the summer, so she's been kind of working ahead on her inspection work to meet the grant requirements. So we're in really good shape there. But over the summer, we still are going to fill. We're hiring a temp to fill just to be able to be responsive on solid waste complaints and things like that. That she would normally take care of. So there's a person that we've, I think I'll get kind of confirmation for the person, but they probably start on the 16th, so they get a few weeks of training and introduction. And I'll forward that name out to everyone once it's confirmed. It's actually the person that we're looking at is a senior environmental engineer. He's semi-retired, so he's got a lot of experience in hazardous waste and environmental management. Perfect for us, a lot of so, and again, it'll just be a temp through most of the summer, and then Melissa plans to return, I think, part time at first and eventually full time. The other good news for us and our section, I know it's not solid waste directly, but you know, last year, because of the gas revenue losses, the site hazard assessment fund was out of money, or was projected to be out of money, and so Ecology sent a letter out to all the local health jurisdictions in early December saying stop working. And since then, we just recently found out about 2 weeks ago, they worked through the legislature, they restored the funding. And so beginning July 1, that program will be fully funded again. And in that program, we've had a gentleman named Brian Donker, who's worked in it. What that grant funding allowed us to do is be responsive on hazardous sites complaints and hazardous site releases. Most of the work was doing site assessments, so going and working off of either the IRCH list or our own knowledge of sites where there's been suspected or known releases of chemicals, contaminants. He would do an assessment report. The site would be then sent up to Ecology for ranking them for whether they need to clean up or not. So that, in a nutshell, is the work that Brian had been doing for quite a while. I mean, that's good news because that's an important function. The other thing that Ecology funded with that grant was our ability to respond to elevated blood level testing. So the health department gets, the state health department gets reports of elevated levels of blood from doctors that are doing tests on mostly young children. And it's referred to as EBLL. And Ecology allowed us to use our site hazard assessment grant funding to do home assessments. So to interview the family, go into the home and try to evaluate what would be the potential sources of lead that would cause the elevated blood level.
So this is elevated levels of lead in the blood.
Yeah, elevated lead level, EBLL. Okay. So for a while, we hadn't been doing them because we weren't sure exactly how to pay for the time, you know, time to do that work, but now that we know the funding's back in place, we've restarted. And obviously, I'm sure as everyone's aware, lead has become a huge issue on many fronts in the state, in the region. So anyway, that's my idea.
Where'd the money come from that they're restoring?
You know, I don't know exactly. I think I'm not exactly sure how they funded it. That's a good question. I can look into that. Get back to you.
From you. Came from you.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have it before.
The check's due by the end of the month.
Right. Yes. They took it out of the education fund.
Rich.
Well, I just had one thing, but I was going to first check and make sure that Pete wasn't also going to report on the Trex challenge.
Nope.
Okay. So the Trex, the manufacturer's plastic lumber, runs a challenge every year that runs from mid-November on America Recycles Day to late April for America, Earth Day. So it runs 5 months. This year we had 21 schools in the county that participated. A lot of the effort due to Bernadette Donald with Clark County, who runs the Green Schools program, and also to Ellen Ives with Waste Connections. So they worked in these schools. Last year there was like one school locally that participated, Fisher's Landing. This year we bumped up to 21 schools participating. So these schools kind of compete, and they all have students bring in plastic film, wrap, bags, etc., clean and dry. It goes to the school, it gets collected, gets weighed, take it to a store that gets it back to their distribution center to recycle it. So those schools working over the year got 12,700 and 66 pounds, so almost 6 tons of plastic film that was collected. They do a calculation that kind of shows for every 10 plastic bags you recycle, you can run a laptop for 3.4 hours. This was in Bernadette's analysis. So you could really run a laptop for 9 years with all of the energy savings from the plastic recycling. Plus, most important for us, it keeps it out of the recycling carts, which Scott appreciates that. Every year in the program, they gave every school that participates and does some collection gets a plastic planting bin. So that goes to all the schools, all 21 schools. And then four of the schools won the challenge for their districts. So they'll be getting a plastic park bench to put like in the school yard or something. So next week, a representative from Trex will be here. We'll make presentations to some of those schools. The benches will get delivered, and Bernadette's going to help with that. So just wanted to let you know we're excited about that. There may be some coverage on it. You may hear that after the event happens.
I read the back of the homework we were supposed to read, and it said that Trex was going to give us a park bench to each school, no matter what. I mean, they had to participate because your list has bottom three didn't do anything, but that must mean about 18.
Again, that might have been incorrect. Every school
gets the top performing school in each participating school district a bench.
Yes,
each school district. Okay.
Yeah. So the districts that participated was I think a couple schools in Camas, a school in Battleground, a number in Evergreen, and a number in Vancouver. So each of those districts, the top school, and the way they do it is they calculate the pounds collected per student. So a small school is on even footing for that. I think
38 pounds or something.
The winning school I think had like 3.8 pounds per student that was collected, which is a lot of plastic bags. And then others had fewer than that, but a lot of them were they were close second, third within the districts too. So a lot of good effort.
Do you know where their manufacturing plant is, Trex?
For Trex?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to visit it last March. It's down, it's down in Fernley, Nevada. So it's about 40 miles east of Reno.
East of Reno.
Okay. The same area is building this big Tesla battery plant or something. So it's kind of in that area. But they get film from the western U.S. and then there's another plant in someplace in Virginia that gets film from the Midwest and eastern U.S.
Great, thank you.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Are there additional retailers having to jump in besides Safeway?
We haven't gotten to them, all of them yet. We're still trying to work with that, and the RAP folks are doing some outreach with the Grocery Association to see if we could kind of work through that. We've not had real success working locally, although New Seasons is doing it. The grocery outlet in Vancouver is very interested in doing it for their customers. I'm not sure, I haven't heard yet if they've started that, but they're planning to. And I think I forget the name of the store in Yakult, I think they were also very interested in getting it going, but they have to deal with some of the transportation issues. They don't have necessarily the backhaul.
Okay, so does Trex pick up the materials at each store?
From the distribution centers. So
the store has to get it somewhere.
Yeah, so, well, the Safeways, they have trucks coming in every day from Clackamas, their distribution center, mm-hmm. and that distribution center feeds 140 Safeways in Oregon, Southwest Washington. Mm-hmm. So the trucks go back empty normally, but they throw in the pallets and cardboard, and then they throw in all the wrap.
Okay.
So it's just a small thing to add in the wrap from the schools or
trucks going
back in the store. Mm-hmm. So it's a built-in system to get back there, and then they bail it all. And every week or two, when they get a full truckload, Trex will send the truck out, and they'll pull it down to Nevada.
Okay. But other stores might just have deliveries from multiple entities and not have that main distribution pipeline.
I know that Safeway and Albertsons, Fred Meyer, Winco, their distribution centers down in Woodburn, QFC, I think, I'm not sure if they have their own distribution center, but they're kind of the same as Fred Meyer. Walmart, I think, does have distribution centers, but they don't go to Trex. So we think that besides Trex, most of the chain stores are all going back to Nevada. And I know Walmart's, I think, going someplace else. We're still trying to, and we've had some discussions with some people from the local Costco, but a lot of their handling material is brokered through their central location, kind of like Kirkland. Mm-hmm. So we're working with them to see if they can get it going. But a lot of it's a process to kind of go through, like, do we want to do this, and is it going to work, and what about contamination, and all the concerns. So the results of the Safeway pilot are posted on the website. I think the city's webpage has a link to that, to their actual report. And then their sustainability manager decided that they would have all of their stores in Oregon and all the way over to Tri-Cities participate in the same program. So they rolled out in the last month the same basic program Clark County has.
Cool.
And they're pretty happy.
That's good. Because I talked to the guy, one of the managers at Winco, just happened to know him and mentioned the program, and he hadn't heard of it. And I didn't talk about it in any length. I just was, because I'd done a little research this past month. He said that they, not only are they taking in the consumers' plastic bags, because they do have a barrel out there, but they go through like 6 containers a day out the back end in terms of their pallets
and
all of that stuff that's coming in. He said it's unbelievable how much they're moving a day.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, why isn't that being captured?
I believe that all that comes back through Winco goes again to their distribution center down in Woodburn and then to Nevada once it's got.
Oh, it is being captured?
It is, yeah.
Okay, because he was making it sound like it wasn't.
Well, and there's lots of urban legend about that, like, oh, they just put it in a dumpster thing.
Okay.
And they don't. I mean, there's a value with valued materials, I think, between $300 and $340 a ton. But it takes a lot of film to get a ton.
Legacy Hospital collects their, you know, the shrink wrap that goes around the cases and everything. They ship it back to across the river to the, they have a recycling plant, and of course all the hospitals feed that, and the film goes someplace, I don't know where.
And I think all of the low density, high density polyethylene that is a film based type material can all go to the same place, but if it's a hospital there maybe have to be some special making sure that all of the gowns and stuff are in
no, this is like on the boxes.
Oh, okay.
That come in from the freight yard.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
So the other piece we're working on is trying to work with the commercial businesses, and a lot is trying to find a good market where they can take it, and then also deal with the volumes because of the density. So, and Grocery Outlet is working on that. They're doing that approach. So they're just filling like a 30-yard dumpster. When that's full, they've been working since January to fill it. They'll haul it to a local MRF that can process it. It may not go to Trex, but and most of the MRF film, if you catch any film at West Van that comes out, it's probably not recoverable because it's been through the carts and through the system and the machining. So there is some stuff that's landfill that we're really trying to get this stuff out of the carts and get it to a good market.
And a lot of other stuff's coming that way too. Your magazines now are wrapped in plastic, and stock reports come, or your proxy things, they all come with that plastic wrap all over them.
We actually visited the one of the post offices here in Vancouver, and they have a huge amount of film that comes through there, and stuff they get like through mail direct or whatever. All the catalogs all come pre-wrapped in package,
bundled,
wrapped around. I mean, like the stacks this thick in plastic, and then that's all on a pallet, and that's all wrapped in plastic. So we're hoping to be able to find a solution for them, but again, it's that baler situation. We can get dense enough that the market can take it without having to just eat up the hauling cost to get it to a regional area.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell.
Good evening. Real quick, we did fill the assistant district manager position at the hauling company. They'll get him settled in and get him around in the next couple of weeks. So I'll probably bring him in here and get him introduced.
Who is it?
I knew you were going to ask, and I can't remember. And I was actually just talking to Pete. It's a familiar name. He's out of waste
management. Is his last name Hill? I want to think Greg or Gary.
It's Greg, yeah, Greg Hill. And it's a familiar name. He's been up north. So anyway, he's coming on board and has a lot of experience. So we're glad to have him. That's really it.
Well, it's tough finding good people these days.
It is.
Pete, you were up.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone. Great to have you all here. We just real briefly on our green business program, we brought on two new businesses that are going to be hopefully great partners with ours. Par Lumber is one, and then is it Pacific Coast Bank? Is that how they go by? The one where you...
Pacific Continental Bank.
The building you worked on, Glumac, I think, right there on Main Street. So they're on board and certified through the program. We do have a morning blend. We put these on every month. I know Alan's been to some of those. It's going to be a Boomerang, which is on Main Street. It's a great give-back nonprofit program on May 19th at 8 a.m. We put on some med events just this past Saturday, and we took back medications from the public. We were at four sites: Peace Health, Cascade Park, Salmon Creek, and then out in the center. And we had over 1,000 folks bringing that in, and over 2,000 pounds of pills. So just amazing to see that come in. We partner with a nonprofit called Prevent, and we also bring in the Sheriff's Department to handle that because some of it's uncontrolled substances. So that certainly helps the water, it helps the waste. And I'll let Kim talk about a couple of things. Clean car campaign and a residue study. Some of the other operational pieces. And then she's going to be presenting on our Recycle Day events, so we'll go into much more depth on that. We've been successful in those. We do have a Recycled Arts Festival coming up, and this is always the last full weekend of June, 25th and 26th. Those are some postcards. On the back, if you look at sponsorships, we've been very successful in getting sponsorships this go-around. We brought in about $20,000 in revenue. We've got McCord Toyota as our presenting sponsor. Waste Connections is a sponsor, is a longtime sponsor. BioClean, let's see, going off memory. You guys can help me. What else we got back there? It's a little quiz on our sponsors.
Upqua,
City of Vancouver.
Waste Connections.
And BioClean. So, we're really looking forward to this. This is our kind of big moment to bring in the public. And the Recycled Arts Festival recently won from the Washington festivals and events association, I believe it is, best festival in the state. So we are renowned, and with that, actually, the Department of Revenue is knocking on our door. They want the UBIs of all the artists. We have successfully brought in the Master Compost Recycler Program. It used to be housed through a contract at Columbia Springs, which is a nonprofit. They do great work. We wanted to bring it in and then start to shift it to the Heritage Farm, which the county has an 80-acre farm, and it's a great fit. So we've moved our demonstration compost site, so folks want to see all the different ways you can compost in your backyard. We now have a demo site at the Heritage Farm, which is 1919 Northeast 78th Street. And we'll be having our first event there May 14th. It's a Saturday, and we've already sold out. We've got about 30 folks from the public coming to learn about compost. I'll do that. We are going to have a regional solid waste system steering committee May 19th, so we will keep this group informed either through minutes and just make sure that we've got that communication. We'll clearly keep you in the loop once the agenda is finalized. And
what was the date again?
May 19th, which is a Thursday. I believe it's at 1 o'clock. It might be 1:30. Some of the pieces that we want to dive into through that group and then back through SWAC are some of the code updates, and so we'll be working with Chuck on that. Mandatory garbage, possibly banning hazardous waste at the transfer stations. So some good policies that I think will help the system. And just to speed along, we will have our annual report published, and we certainly can send you this via PDF or a hard copy if you're interested. Some good accolades for our programs in there. And then finally, we've had some personnel changes. I don't know if folks have had the chance to work with Zia Luce. She came in as an environmental programs technician and then has spearheaded the transition of the Master Compost Recycler Program, has done great work for us, been with us about 8 months. And she and her partner, who's a science teacher at Battle Ground High School, their dream was to get 20 acres to farm, log, you know, just to manage. They came from the Bay Area. They picked Clark County 3 years ago, did a lot of research, and have been priced out of the market and have not been able to do it. So they're moving to Vermont. And just today, we learned that another great employee who was at one of our SWAC meetings, who's headed up our school program, Bernadette Donald, has taken a job with Public Works. So our loss, their gain. So we've got some postings out, and we'll keep moving forward. Yes, so Kim had a couple operations updates.
So Mike had a public meeting for the Leichner Landfill last month on April 26th, and it went well. Community was, a lot of people showed up. I popped in real quick, and there's a lot of people really interested, and you know, but it went really well and successful, so we felt really good about it, which is good. The neighborhood association members came and had questions, and it all went really well, so that's good. And the cart tagging campaign, where we go and we put the little tags on the carts and have outreach, that is starting up on May 23rd. So the job has been posted. I'll be leading 10 crew members to go out and inspect carts and put tags on and let them know, don't do those plastic bags and glass or clamshells or plastic packaging. So I'm really excited about that. I'm getting all that stuff wrapped up right now.
So staff of 10?
Yeah, staff of 10. So they'll work for 4 weeks and 2 days. And they'll also be doing some multifamily work, so they'll be out in the apartments, making sure all the signage is good, that they have all the resources they need. To try and improve the contamination that's at the multifamily stream.
So don't get tagged.
Yeah, they won't get tagged, because it'd be kind of hard to figure out who put that in there. But they will get like reusable bags that they are encouraged to put their recycling in and then dump out their recyclables, so they're not using plastic bags to take their recyclables to the bins. And then we've been I sent out a survey to all of the managers of all the complexes in Clark County and to try to get some data from them about how to improve at their specific complex, like, because we have assumptions about like what would help, but we need to actually get that insight. And there's over 650 complexes, and it's kind of hard to. So we did a survey, and we're getting a lot of good data from that. So, and then we'll also go out and do some surveying of the actual residents at complexes that agree that that's okay to do, which we've had a few sign up for that, so that's great. And then the residue study. So we're doing a study. There's the Waste Connections does a allocation study of all the recyclables to try to figure out the composition of what recyclables are coming in through the stream. And so, you know, a certain percentage are plastic bottles, a certain percentage are, you know, milk cartons or whatever. And a little part of that at the very bottom is residue, but we don't, and which is like the contamination or the extra stuff that we don't want in there or that isn't really valuable. And so we're doing a study to evaluate what is in there. And so a characterization study of just the residue. And our first, we're doing sorts on the single family stream, the multi-family stream, the rural areas, and then Camas and Washougal. So those are opportunities if you guys are interested to volunteer. We're going to be sorting through materials. I know Alan's joined us on similar studies and has had a lot of eye-opening experiences. Mm-hmm. So the first one is May 21st, which is a Saturday. And then there are two on, well, there's one on Friday, June 17th, and then the next day on Saturday, June 18th. And we haven't finalized the date for the last one, but it'll be the 29th or 30th of June. So, and I think the first one is multifamily, and then the second one is single family, and then Camas, and then the rural areas is the last one. So if you're interested in that, just let me know, and I'll get you set up.
They don't work you too hard either. Lots of cookies and good stuff.
Yeah, we have snacks, and we'll bring gloves and vests and everything.
You get a vest?
Huh?
You need a vest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're on, at the transfer, because we do it at the transfer station. So you gotta have all your high-vis gear, and so nobody gets run over or something, you know? Yeah, that's it for me.
Thank you.
Good job, Kim.
All right. Sure. I mean, if they don't have a copy already, because this doesn't format to read all at once. So yeah, I mean, I've talked to you and introduced that we've been working. Quick, I'll make it a quick introduction because I think we're familiar with the situation. That Circle C landfill, which is up in the center, it's located just. It's on the east side of the, just on the east side of the highway. You can't really see it because there's trees and a resident. Just south, just almost probably a quarter to half mile south of the exit to the center. And it's been closed for close to 20, I think close to 23, 24 years. The owners, the two property owners and the owners of the landfill are the Carlsons, and their father ran it. Maybe some of you knew him, I don't know. But it's been closed for a while. They came to us last year and said, and they've been on a post-closure permit. So they pay a permit fee every year. They've been required to monitor groundwater, landfill gas, leachate, are the key things, and also just do the surveys of settlement cover and integrity. But there's expenses around that. They've had engineers that have been working for them. The permit fee is several thousand dollars. They've asked to terminate. So we, the Department of Ecology has guidance around termination of post-closure. We took that guidance, but it doesn't have any numerical criteria or specific criteria. There are some numbers in there. And so what the staff, Melissa, and also Brian, who I mentioned earlier, have been working on, and also in cooperation and communicating with Ecology, is to develop specific criteria, both numerical measured criteria, plus several land controls, long-term institutional controls, to address the issues around that would allow us to say from a public health and environmental perspective that the landfill does not pose a public health threat or a threat to groundwater or the environment, which would allow them to get out of that permit. And I'll begin by talking about the criteria and then talk about assuming this moves forward or it will move forward. I don't want to assume that it won't. I'm certain it will. But at the point that they meet all the criteria, then, and I'll talk a little bit about it at the end, about what that looks like. Because, you know, landfills are like geological features, right? I mean, they're usually, some are in the ground, so you don't know they're even there, right? And some are, like this one, are kind of built above the ground or maybe in part of an area that was mined at one time. So it's kind of hard to, I think, for most of us to imagine, and I don't think the public to imagine, that you would ever not have some degree of due care. So I'll go through this criteria, and then I'll talk about the due care part. But again, I think we're addressing most of that through the things we've described in this table. So I'll start by talking about the areas, and again, what I'd like to do is just kind of run through this real quick, not spend a lot of time on all the details, but for those who may not have had time to read it, take any questions. I'll take another step back and say what we've done to this point is we've worked internally. We have the agreement of Dr. Melnick, the health director, to move forward with this. We have in this table in its current state, which I sent out last week, does include some minor updates based on the feedback from ecology. So we have ecology's support to move forward with these criteria and these elements. The next step, after you've had a chance to look at it and provide us with any question, comments, I want to talk about procedure. I don't know if after this presentation, if we could ask for a vote from the commission to allow us to move forward. But assuming we have that, your approval to move forward with this, the next two steps in line are we will then bring it to the property owners. It's public information. If they would have ever said, show us what this looks like today, we'd have given it to them. But I'm trying to at least get through enough of working with, you know, SWAC and ecology that when we bring it to them, we feel like we're pretty close to what we're going to end up with. But the last, my plan is if we get the okay from SWAC tonight, is we would go meet with them hopefully in the next 2 weeks and put this in front of them and then give them some time. Again, we're not asking for their permission to do it. We just want to get them familiar with the concept. And as I'm going through the criteria, I'll talk a little bit about the things I think, the issues that I think will be the biggest challenge for them. And this is just our opinion. We haven't talked to them about it yet. And then finally, we are going to go through a public process. So it's not really required. There's no law requiring us. But again, as the public health department, we feel it's our responsibility to bring this to the public. Basically put this table, provide a packet of information of the history of the landfill, reports, data, and allow the public, I'm not sure what we'll end up on, somewhere between 30 to 45 days, to review that material and provide us with any additional comments. And then at the end of that, then we would finalize the criteria. And assuming the Carlsons want to move forward at that point, then they'll just have to begin collecting this data and this information and putting some of these controls in place. And at some future time, if they meet all the criteria, then we would then see, they would be able to no longer have to have a post-closure permit. Tongue twister. So I wanted you to give you the broad overview of how we want to marshal this thing forward. I missed an important deal. This was an old construction and debris landfill. And so to our knowledge, there wasn't any or much municipal solid waste. Now, I haven't been around for a long time. I know there's probably some longtime solid waste folks around that might know a little. It seems like every landfill has several interesting stories about what people saw or heard what they did there. But again, I feel like the approach we're taking addresses unknowns, et cetera, things like over drums of something put in there, et cetera. And there is a body of prior work of monitoring data, et cetera. And again, as we work through this evaluation, that'll also be looked at. So any quick questions before I kind of dive into these criteria?
A
I'll save mine for the end.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So what I'll do is I'll just go to the criteria. So, well, the areas are settlement and cover integrity. So this, I think this is about 8 acres of land surface, and it is above ground. So it has an impermeable cover, a gas collection system, and below that cover, and that does have vents that come out, and then soil over it. So that's important. That has to stay in place. There's a gas production criteria. Now, the gas burner's been turned off for a long time. I don't have the year. I didn't write that down what the year was. But it's really not generating much gas, and it's certainly not enough gas to be able to keep the burner going, and it's been in that state for a long time. Leachate production, so there is a leachate collection system that exists that has an outlet at the east side of the landfill, and they haven't really been collecting and sending that data to a lab for a while, but we're going to ask them to go back and start collecting that again. And then groundwater monitoring, and they have several wells around the landfill, but one of the wells, there's only been, and for some reason I don't know why, there's only been one downgradient well on the downgradient side of the landfill. So there's several upgradient wells and one downgradient well. And then there's the last two I'll just talk to at the end, covenant and usage control. So for settlement and cover integrity, there is a procedure for evaluating the settlement. It's really short term. I don't think there's been any observations because Melissa does go out at least twice a year to the landfill and make observations and review the operations and some of this work. There's been no significant issues around settlement recovery integrity, but there's also a where you put out these survey points and they're surveyed in, and then they'll do one survey probably in the fall or this summer, and then do another one about a year later, and that's just to see is there any significant either differential settlement or overall settlement of the landfill. Again, given the nature of the age of this and the materials that went into these, mostly inert materials, although there was some organic, I think as far as like, you know, wood and things like that. And then after that, if that passes that criteria, all we would really do for future on this particular issue, because, you know, from my perspective, you know, there's still material in it that's probably going to slowly degrade. I mean, a lot of the degradation has happened and generated gas, significant gas. But in other words, I don't think any of us could predict, you know, 15 years from now, there's going to be a major settlement in a certain year of the landfill. So the way we would see this move forward is we do this shorter term evaluation, and also including the prior observations, make a conclusion that there's not significant settling. But then we would, and this is described in the covenants, we'll develop a covenant, an institutional control that would go with the land. So any future owner, the current and future owners of that property would, if they observed any significant settlement or sloughing or parts of the cap were observably degrading, they would need to go out and get a geotechnical analysis and then determine if they need to repair it. So that's a long-term ongoing control that would run with the land and any future ownership. Secondly is gas production. Methane is more of a threat for two reasons, right? Either it's heavier than air, it settles in low areas, so it can be an asphyxiation threat, especially if it's near structures and there's indoor spaces. Secondly, there's obviously an explosive threat if you get the right mix of methane and oxygen. But again, to date, they haven't done gas measurements in several years. We don't think there's a lot of gas generation, so if they meet this criteria of being at or below 25% of the lower explosive limit for methane, and this is actually consistent with Oregon law on methane for old landfills and other fills that generate methane. So they meet that criteria, so there's several places where they can measure gas concentrations, and they'll do that. over a year, and at least, I think, at least four events, and or I'm sorry, at least eight events. And you have to do that over different barometric pressures and because the gas generation can change based on and the gas emanating from the landfill can change based on weather conditions and lower high pressure systems. And then
so can I ask a question?
Sure.
So when it, since I first read this, this has always puzzled me. Mm-hmm. It seems counterintuitive to me that in the middle of the landfill, you've got to be at 25%, right. But out at the edge, where you're closer to the rest of civilization, you can be at 100%. Yeah. That seems, am I missing something?
Yeah, this is guidance. It's out of ecology, and we've had the same question. I think we can change that. I know we were struggling with it ourselves, and ecology didn't add anything to that. In my opinion, I think we would just basically use the 25% lower explosive limit criteria anywhere we measured it. I mean, again, I think we're going to be measuring it from existing ports that are connected directly to a gas collection system. That's where we're going to measure the highest concentrations if there's significant methane. So I think that criteria will get us a long way. Now, but the other long-term control around gas production, because again, it's just very unpredictable. Like, you know, again, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, some organic material that breaks down slower could start breaking down and generate some gas. So again, to say, so our approach again is to say we're doing these measurements, this will give us a good idea. You know, if you look at data about landfills and methane production, generally there's a heavy period, and I think the data from Leichner demonstrates this, there's a heavy period of gas production when there's a lot of breakdown occurring, and then it gets to a point where it starts diminishing. And so, and I think we have some of that data, at least from when it was being collected. I think we're in that place, but we just want to verify. But ultimately, we would still have to maintain some type of passive venting system so that gas that might be generated in the future could still escape from the landfill. We just don't think it will ever be at a concentration that poses a physical or explosive threat. But at the same time, you can't, because I think the other problem you could have is if you don't have a way for the gas to get out of the cover, then you could have gas build up, that can create bubbles, preferential flow of more concentrated gases in some other direction. So we feel it's a better approach to leave some type of passive venting that exists on the landfill to allow for that sort of unknown, future unknown gas.
Well, we've all seen, what was it, Los Angeles, where the methane came out of that well, and it just went right down the, you know, right. You said it was heavier than air. It went right down, and it's, yeah, so that's why they moved all those people.
Right, and you're rich.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, and maybe you can help me understand how we're interpreting this right, so I'm thinking that in the interior of the landfill, 25% of the lower explosive limit is met at 25% of the sample, so let's say you do 100 samples inside, a quarter of those samples have to be at the 1.25 limit. But some of them could be spiked, can be up at 10% or 20%. So you'll have some areas in the interior of the landfill that are higher, but at least 25% has to be 1.25% or below. And then on the boundary one, let's say you did 100 samples there,
right.
Every single one of the samples would have to be 5% or less.
Oh,
so I think
right.
That's a different thing. You've got spikes, and so it's kind of it doesn't really average it, but I mean, it's kind of a weighted average. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that may be why that's stated that way. But again, ultimately, we would measure from several existing locations for methane that there are these vents that exist.
Or you have established
right monitoring points for that for the methane gas. So leachate production. So there's two.
I don't get that either. I got a different view of it.
I'm sorry. So on this one, at or below 25% of the lower explosive limit, that would be for any measurement. So I think what I would say is that at the points we'll measure, if we get gas.
That's when.
Yeah, sorry about that. Any detections above that, we'd have to look. We might just have to do more frequent sampling and look at it more closely. But if we had any detections above that, then we would do a longer term monitoring. But if we went out for a couple of years under this scenario and got none over that, that would probably be reason enough for us to.
Then you would argue it's meeting that criteria.
Exactly. And then, so for leachate production, so there's a leachate production piping network that's at the bottom of the landfill. As I understand it, the landfill was not lined at its bottom. It was started years ago before there was lining of clay liners or other types of liners for the bottoms of landfills. But the leachate systems does collect leachate at the bottom. I don't know if there's some clay material or it's some bedrock that there was some water produced. I think it's also collecting other waters, you know, because it's in the lower part of the landfill. The bottom of the landfill is below the local grade. It's in like a small ravine, kind of little canyon. But basically, there's been, you know, ongoing but not heavy leachate and leachate mixed with other materials. And basically for us, in the end, is looking to the how you close it and from leachate perspective is, if you shut off that system, then whatever's being preferentially collected by the leachate system, it will now eventually perk into groundwater, okay? So we're gonna look at the leachate and we're gonna apply groundwater standards to the concentrations. So that we will do measurements of it, sample those measurements, test them for the criteria that we refer to under Table 1 of 173.200.040 of the Administrative Code. And if they're below or at a lot of that criteria for the leachate, again, over this sampling period, and again, this is Table 1, I pulled this up just to go through it.
This would be similar to the idea that the Indian casino has of forcing their effluent down into the ground again.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, right, the way that we're looking at leachate is that the leachate is now being preferentially pulled out of the landfill, collected, and not going into groundwater or surface water.
Mm-hmm. But it'd go down into the ground, but not into the aquifer.
Right, yes, not to the aquifer.
So that's the argument.
But then we want to apply groundwater standards and the Table 1 standards to the leachate so that we know, and that's a very conservative approach, that we would, that leachate that's preferentially collecting concentrated leachate from the landfill. Again, so it's a pretty conservative approach. But I kind of got a two-forked attack on leachate and groundwater impacts. I mean, obviously the biggest concern for us, knowing that there's a regional aquifer under this landfill, is groundwater impacts. So basically, if the leachate comes in and it's below or at a lot of the criteria, then that gives a high degree of confidence that it would not negatively impact the groundwater.
You say a lot of it. Who's going to make the determination if something's over it? You say everything has to be met, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I thought you said just a lot of it.
Well, let me say again, one of the other things is you have the upgrading of wells and downgrading. So for certain things like, you know, inorganics, metals, et cetera, you could have naturally high levels of certain metals that show up in the upgrading wells and also show up in the downgrading wells at the same concentration. That's probably what we would call background. But certainly, landfills generate, because they change the pH, because of the anaerobic digestion of organic material, and they can release additional metals. Generally, you're looking at manganese and iron tend to be the primary high metals that come out of landfills just because they're being preferentially, because of the acidity of the leachate or of the water that's passed through the landfill, releasing it from the natural rock, whatever soils that are around it. But basically, we would do all of those things. There is past data that's looked at like volatile organic compounds and other compounds, some of these compounds here. I haven't looked at the data myself.
Can you go to the top of the page where it says that? You haven't captured that. The one I had says no agency filings affecting this section since 2003. See it up in the right-hand corner?
Yeah.
You mean, you know, what did we do? Pass this law and then nobody's paid any attention to it since 2003.
I'm not sure what that refers to. Are you familiar with that term in the state code? I think from reading that, my sense of it is that this was written in 03 and they haven't...
And nobody's tried to change it.
Nobody's changed it.
Yeah.
That's why I had to interpret it.
Mm-hmm. I got a quick question, too, because we've got some wastewater folks in the room, too, with some experience, but I know testing of street sweepings that we've done, every time you add on a new item, it's more money. Mm-hmm. And are we suggesting that they test every single one of this big, long list?
To start off, we're going to ask them to test all of these things. I think there's existing data that shows that, and I'll be honest, I don't know why we would necessarily look at radionuclides.
I'm just wondering what a sample cost.
It could be significant. But
you shipped that to a lab and just said, hey, you wanted this? Because we came back and we were like, it's going to cost you $75,000.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Who's paying for this?
Carlson's going to have to pay for it.
Well,
again, the process I laid out earlier, I mean, what we're just trying to do is define the criteria that would allow us to say you don't have to be on this permit anymore.
But they're going to ask the question, how much?
Well, they can go, they can work with their consultants, they can go to the lab, they can... Okay. I'm sure they'll argue back why they don't have to do certain of these. I mean, personally, I'm not concerned about radionuclides. Again, there's existing old VOC data that they measured in the past, but I think we feel like it's probably better to get a full sweep off the beginning. But if we could do a full sweep and a lot of these other contaminants that are more chemicals that you would, if they had put a lot of chemicals in the landfill, which I don't think they did, or at least anyone seems to know that they ever did, and that all comes back non-detect, we're not going to ask them to do it in future samplings. I mean, we will definitely not monitor all of these parameters for the period that we're asking if the initial results don't show any and they are consistent with the prior results.
Well, the prior, over the years, they have all these tests.
Yes.
And there's got to be records of all of the tests, all of the data. If I'm hearing you right, you want to run one fresh set, compare it to the old, and then take a look at what can you take off of that list, what has been determined to really be insignificant anymore. So this would really be a one-time fee for them.
I'm not sure if they've run this big, long list, because this is a new criteria that's being proposed.
But we've been monitoring that place for 20-something years.
But when we monitor the Lekin landfill, we do not monitor all of those things. We monitor maybe 5 things.
So they monitored 10 and we have 100 or something like that?
I don't think they've tested for 100 things.
Well, we have results of whatever tests have been done. And that's what these folks have been being judged on for all these years.
Right.
So as long as you're...
Well, again, they've only been testing for certain metals and landfill parameters. They haven't been testing a large sweep.
It's a big sweep.
It is. And again, I mean, I think it's not unreasonable to ask to have it done one more time. Again, I personally am open to them if they have a good reason or if there's really old data and they want to present that to us and say, we really don't think we need to do these. I mean, I'm open to listening to that.
How long since we've done it?
I don't know when the last full suite of samples were done.
You know, it could be that it's fairly fresh, so you wouldn't have to go through everything.
But there isn't a requirement to do the full suite. I think that this is a criteria that we're now proposing. Mm-hmm. So I don't want folks to think that just because we brought it up on the screen that's what they have to do.
I'm with you. That's scary.
Yeah.
Was it brand new or somebody?
No, it's in 2003.
It's not brand new, but it's a guideline, and so now we're utilizing a guideline to help with the post.
So that guideline was meant for a landfill, a multiple, or for reducible waste?
Not necessarily.
Is that a groundwater waste?
This is a groundwater piece that we're overlying on ours to be ultra conservative.
Yes.
With the potential for any risk.
They'd say they wouldn't.
Did the landfill electric, did they go through this whole thing?
Pete's right. I mean, I haven't done a comparison of this list and past data. They probably haven't sampled for all of these. But this is the groundwater protection criteria. So I'm starting from a point on behalf of the public health aspect of this, that
exactly right.
This is what we propose to look at based on this established criteria that the state has, protection of groundwater. I'm not close to them coming back and presenting or giving us the old data and saying, look, we don't know why we would have to sample for this. There's been samples of light compounds or other compounds. I'm open to that conversation, but at least this is the point I'm going to start from.
And can you, because what Don's saying, this does not have to do with landfills?
No, that is a landfill criteria.
It is not.
It's a protection of groundwater criteria.
It's a groundwater.
Yes, we're overlying that on top of our landfills. Yes. Ultra conservative in this process. But it is a big suite.
Yeah.
How far is this from the casino construction? Anybody know?
I want to say it's a couple miles. I mean, because the casino's up on the north, the intersection of the center exit's on the north.
I'd like to see. Is county doing anything about that? Or you guys aren't even let in there to, you know, they're talking about doing that injection of the.
It's being referenced in both places.
We know a lot of
toilet waste.
Yeah, So just to digress for a second about the casino, I will tell you, we've been talking to the Board of Counselors. I mean, obviously there's a lot of press about a lot of things around the casino and the water system. I'll just say that we're hoping that we're going to talk to the council very soon, and we've already made recommendations to them about what we think is a better outcome there. But it's really going to come from the Board of Health and the Board of County Councilors are one and the same. But
is that a viable disposal method?
It's an accepted practice.
As long as it doesn't get into the aquifer?
It's going to get in the aquifer. Talk DPA, I already did. Yeah. It's going to the aquifer.
it's not an issue.
I don't want to go too far off on that, but I will tell you, we're going to be talking to the Board of Health on, I think it's the 18th, about the wastewater system. So I wanted to just, so these are good points. I think Pete, raised an important detail that is good to highlight. Again, I'm sure the Carlsons and their consultants will offer a different, probably also push back on this one. Again, and like I said, I mean, I'm open.
25 years ago. Silly buddy.
If I was the owner and you asked me to do that, I'd probably keel over with all those tests. I mean, I agree with Pete. It's going to cost a bundle.
Well, not only is it going to cost a bundle, but you don't have anything to compare it to. I mean, this is the groundwater. If you come test the groundwater at my place using that criteria, I don't know how it's going to come out. I mean,
okay.
To me, it's a huge, huge thing, and I would encourage the owners to say, hey, do we really need to do all of these things? And what is your baseline? I mean, let's say that, pick an item there. Is that naturally occurring in that habitat, or is it because there's a landfill?
None of these are naturally occurring habitats. And again, all I would say, I mean, this is great feedback. Like I said, I'm not going to sit here and resist a technical defense or argument to take some of these things off of the analyte list. Again, generally, a lot when you run, like for volatile organic compounds, you capture a couple hundred compounds in one test. So So it's not like you just pick one off. You can't pick some off and pick other and leave others on anyway when you send it to the lab. So I totally get that. But again, this is existing criteria. It's based on state water protection law. It's the only numerical criteria we have that we thought was the most appropriate for this purpose. And so this is my starting point. Again, I mean, we're talking about a landfill. So, because in other words, we're talking about when this term post-closure permit is done and we're done with this, they're not going to have to sample the groundwater anymore.
Right.
They can pull the well, decommission the wells, and walk away because we're basically going to get enough data that we have a high confidence level that we can say that there is no impact to the drinking water from this whole landfill. So my sense of it is it's a cost, but it's a cost that gives us, as the public health agency, a high degree of confidence that there are no impacts from this landfill or groundwater. Because if, again, what happens, we close it, the Carlsons go away, maybe they sell it, I don't know, etc. Some new owner comes along, and wells, maybe there's some nearby wells that start showing something, the first place you're going to start looking is the landfill. And then we're back to square one. Again, there's no absolute guarantees. That's why I use terminology like high degree of confidence. Because the nature of environmental sampling, et cetera, there's uncertainty. So I think, I mean, again, if some of you guys want to think about this some more, if you want to make a recommendation that we reevaluate this criteria, I'm happy to do that. And again, I know that I've been sharing this certain stages in the past with Pete, but I've never said, hey, Pete, do you want your guys to look at this? And so again, obviously, they're part of the solid waste and environmental protection of the county, so I'm obviously interested in their thoughts.
Any hints for what this grout might be used for?
I'm sorry?
Any hints as to what they want to do with this plan? Chuck a grade school on top of it or whatever.
Yeah, I got that.
Not where it's located.
It's a really...
It's off of Paradise Point, or... runs right
west.
Right off I-5 on the west east side.
Yep.
You've got the vehicle consignment business there.
Yeah, place like that.
Yeah.
I would think the common sense of any landfill, you don't put any structures on it anyway.
Right. I don't think in this case that's practical to put any structures on or right next to this thing.
Well, Chuck, I've got a couple of things. First, I concur with your mission. Your mission is to protect the groundwater and public health. I don't have any dispute with that. The one suggestion I would make is if you took this list to a sampling lab and said, give me a price tag, just so we got something rational, a data point to talk about, and just say, to do these tests, you know, what order of magnitude cost is going to cost it? You know, that may make this debate go away or make this debate really charged, depending on the number you come back with.
It also might be able to have, what do they see as the test patterns for doing something like a landfill? Here's what we typically test. I have some information there.
They've been working with an engineering firm, SES Engineers. They work for Environmental Services, and they're a very experienced firm. I'm sure they'll have some useful feedback, and they work with a lot of landfills in the region. I'm open, but this is my starting point. I will do that. I'll talk to Bob, Melissa, or Brian, contact the lab, and get a
Let's see where it is. I mean, if it's $2,000, so what?
Yeah.
You know, if it's $22,000, that's a different.
Right.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about cost. Well, go ahead. You weren't finished.
Well, I got a couple other just questions. One is on the settlement and about the. If you're going to evaluate 2 years in a row and you're looking for a half an inch or less change in elevation, my question would be, if it's more than a half an inch, I would argue you sample again another year later. And until it meets your criteria, you're obligated to sample subsequent years.
That's what it says.
Yes.
Well, it doesn't say that clearly to me.
Okay, okay.
And I would be very specific about...
So the third benchmark would be needed to evaluate the following year, and sublet parameter would be reassessed.
Yeah, and I would say subsequent years until the criteria is met.
Okay. No, that's good, that's good.
So that's... The other thing is, and I don't, under gas production, attract nuisance. Could you describe what that means?
Okay, yeah, I think that's a misspelling. It's supposed to say eliminate attractive nuisance characteristics of landfill gas risers. So there are these risers,
yes,
for the gas, yes, to passively vent.
Yes.
And ecology was concerned that we're saying leave them there to allow for this thing I talked about earlier. But then, like, oh, hey, what is that? Hey, let's go jump in it. So I think that's like putting fences,
okay,
and stuff around them.
Protect it. Protect people from themselves.
Protect people from, yeah, hurting themselves. Yeah.
Okay.
That's attractive. Yeah, attractive nuisance is the term. It's just not spelled.
Okay.
Get a big lighter.
Let's go landfill diving.
What the leachate is?
I'm sorry?
What is the volume of the leachate? I mean, we're talking all about, is it a gallon or is it a... 10,000 gallons, or do we have any
idea? No, I don't have that number with me, but I will get a number.
Because that makes
sense. And it varies seasonally. Okay. I think in the dead of summer, it's kind of a steady but still slow drip of the leachate.
Because our aquifer's like
over the winter, when it was really... Sorry, go ahead.
Our aquifer's like 175 feet down, so if it's 10,000 gallons a day, if it's a gallon a day, they're never going to get there. So
yeah, curious. I mean, the leachate rate, I'm not as concerned about as I am about the chemical concentrations.
You said that nobody had been testing it for a while.
They haven't been testing it for a couple of years. We've tried to be, you know, I just want to say, and a lot of these things have been going on when I came along, but I think the department has been trying to be flexible with the family, because there are a lot of expenses that are the ongoing... just to even living up to the ongoing permit, but they haven't been doing them all.
Yeah.
So again, that's another reason to come back and make sure we do a full suite of all of these and address all of these issues. That's one of our points.
Like there's $30,000 a month. Yeah. It's got some capital improvements in there.
Yep.
It's not cheap.
Oh, it's done.
Mike's watching that like a hawk.
Yeah, so anyway, let me move on to something that I really think is, I mean, I'm glad this has been good discussion on these parameters, so I appreciate that. That's good feedback. So the only other issue, and I sort of alluded to it earlier, is groundwater. We see that as the biggest threat, obviously, the biggest potential threat, mm-hmm, from this old landfill.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the requirements, and in my experience of working on cleanup sites, and some of that work included cleanup sites that were landfills or had landfills on them, I've never seen where you have one down gradient well. And I don't. This was allowed a couple of decades ago. It's water, pun intended, under the bridge. But we really need to have a minimum three down gradient wells. That, because you want to capture two things. One is you want to capture water over an impacted area down gradient of the landfill, and you also want to be able to look at groundwater flow direction so that you get a sense of, you know, is there a seasonality to the direction of the flow, etc. In other words, if you do three wells and you place them correctly so that you can look at the groundwater gradient and you're measuring it and you're seeing that the gradient is in a direction that's not even from the landfill, then you're not measuring the right water. And I just think that would be a fairly significant cost. I can't off the top of my head tell you how much that would cost.
Yeah.
But they have one existing well, so they need to put in two other wells.
Oh, do you?
But I don't know that number right now. I mean, again, I don't think it's more, I mean, we would just basically try to measure the immediately shallow groundwater, because that's, if there's an impact from the landfill, that's probably where you'll see it. But
they were in compliance with the rules when they ran it. With the one.
I don't know. The county who was overseeing it allowed them to have just one well. I don't know why.
But you're thinking grandfather.
Well, I'm only talking out loud that if it was cited and approved with one, then there's got to be some type of a grandfather consideration, because there's a, and I understand why you would want to put two more wells in there. But now you're talking a whole lot more money for a maybe we're going to let you close this. When they ran, and my experiences with this, it was at the City of Tacoma landfill, that EPA came back and said, we're going to own Tacoma and we're going to sue everybody and everything else. And the lovely mayor up there said, time out. What we put in there, you guys approved, was good stuff to put in landfills at the time. Mm-hmm. City won their case. And I'm just thinking of these people, if they followed the rules and only one was required, then I don't know who should pay for the other two, is my point.
Okay.
I can understand where you would want them and why.
Yep. And then check, you have one, so you could find out if that one down gradient well.
That was my thought. Check that one out, see if you got a
Yeah, see if you've problem. Got an issue anyway.
Yeah, you might not have an issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'm just trying to look at it. If I was the owner, what would I say?
And I think it would be good, just this dovetails to what you were saying. You know, if you were to do this, here's what your price tag is. This much for putting in the two wells, this much for testing for the sweep, you know, the range, just so they, because I know from my experience dealing with SES and dealing with landfills, the money just, it never stops.
Right.
So. Well, and is there post-closure money for this landfill? So it's all out of their pocket. It's not like Leichner's where there was a fund.
There was a short period where they were allowed to stay open for a few years to collect the fund, but that's long gone.
Okay, so now it's out of their pocket. There is no
correct.
There is no super fund. There is no county bailout. There's no nothing else. It's all, they had good business practices at the time, we think. And now they're paying forever and ever on that.
And that's the bottom economics. If they're paying X right now, and we go to them and say it's going to cost 30X, well, they know they can keep doing what they're doing for 30 years without needing to close it.
Or they could pay it up front.
How much are they paying a year now?
I don't know how much they were paying their consultants. I mean, the permit fees, like about $4,500.
Because, see, that would be the thing. If we're proposing $50,000 or however much we're talking, putting in wells, $100,000, and they're paying $5,000 a year. If I owned it, I know what I'd say. Oh, we'll just
close. Yeah, no. Again, this is great feedback. I'm coming at it from, again, looking at being protected.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once they are able to walk away from this, however that happens, I want us as a public health agency to be able to say that.
We did our
job. We have a high degree of confidence that there's nothing. But I get you what you're saying, and I'm not saying no. I'm considering that, and we'll go back and talk about it.
What do you need from us? You need a motion to say continue down the road, bring us back this information, and go forward. I think it's commendable. I think that we're going to be leading.
Well, what you're doing is great.
You're doing good work.
Yeah.
We're hung up on the details.
No, I know.
Which
no, this has been good. That's
part of our job.
That's why we're doing this. Yeah. You know, we want to hear from you.
I would like to make a motion to encourage you to continue with this process.
And with some dollar figures that we can take a look at to see.
And provide the dollar figures and the answers to the questions. I think you're doing it the right way. I really do. Bring us back the information, bring us back the rewrites. And
okay, yeah.
I'll second that.
Any other questions, comments?
So you're going to proceed, but also using an abundance of caution, correct? Is that with that mindset, right?
Yes.
I live there.
Yeah.
I live out there.
Sure.
So this is important to me. I know they're doing the Paradise Point.
Right.
rebuild of the interchange, and I just looked it up. It's involved. I looked at the Circle C properties involved with that, the drainage channel. That's all interconnected. So I don't know what's going to happen with that property, but there's a big, massive land that the center of the city is looking at coming into the city when they're doing their comprehensive plan. So that land will be part of it.
That comes to the city's
end. That shadow's coming in, you're looking that way.
That saw shadows.
So the land use, you know, it will be, I don't know, it will be important to make sure that that is a safe place for the community on all levels.
So. I mean, I just want to say that, you know, also, so I appreciate this, and this is good feedback. I really, this is good. I mean, I don't really expect there to be a lot of issues.
Yeah, I know.
But I also have to get enough information that as you're representing that we can do that. So that's always been the approach. And again,
well, you're going to sign off on something, and if you're not sure, then you're going to sign off.
Well, and again, like if you know, and your points about would they be able to do it are very important. But I look at it a couple ways. One is if they are able to do it and close it, and then we didn't do enough due diligence and something went wrong in the future, guess who then owns the responsibility for dealing with it? The county does.
And you're, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that's another thing that we have to seriously consider. So that's the other thing. I mean, because again, that's my experience. I think the other thing is by defining the criteria, if the family says, can't do it, we'll just limp along on our permit for a while.
They might take that step. If it's $5,000 a year versus $50,000, right, we'll let the kids worry about it. And
yeah.
But, and go on. And that doesn't help. That doesn't help resolve a potential issue.
Just kicking the can down the
road. Yeah. Excuse me, Brad.
But I think in the end, I mean, the only other thought. This goes back to my work in cleanup in Oregon in the past. I mean, again, I think some people think, or I don't know what they think, I haven't asked them what they think the real estate potential of it is. The casino's going in, right? The center's going to grow.
It's not 2 miles, they're real close.
Okay, it's real close. Oh, yeah. So, you know, maybe there's, so again, the other outcome here is that for some reason they can't go through with all this or finish this. But if someone comes along and wants to buy it, wants to develop it, whatever, now they can determine what the cost might be, and it might be worth it for them to finish it. But at least by defining that criteria, and the reality, I think, is no one's going to buy it until someone, the college or the county, has said this doesn't pose a threat. Because no bank, no one who knows anything about contaminated properties or old landfills is going to buy a property that has potential liabilities associated with it. So that's what we're trying to find and control the long-term liabilities and create a path out.
Are they getting out of their liabilities, though?
Huh?
I must be reading something wrong. It seems like even if they do all that, they're still on the hook down the line if something comes up. So.
Well,
and if I was the owner, I'd say, how long am I on the hook, even after I've done all this? And that's quite, am I reading that right?
Yeah. Well, again, so when you establish institutional controls it for a property, you know, it's recorded on the property. So a future owner comes in, once they've signed and bought it, they've agreed to the terms of that.
That's right.
The future.
So it becomes, but again, I just don't see how you, for a large above ground landfill like this, that you don't have certain controls in place, that someone has to do some degree of due care over the future. And again, it's a common tool used in cleanup sites where there's contamination or groundwater controls or structural controls. It's not an uncommon tool.
Just a random thing that went through my head. Do we know how many cubic yards that site would be? You went in and scraped it all out.
I don't. I will get some detailed information out.
You talk about remediation and you talk about all this. What would it take, just like the Boise landfill, scrape it out, use it? I mean, we can't use it like we did with Boise, but one of the thought processes with Boise
years ago was dig it out and put it in somebody else's lined landfill.
Use it as cover.
yeah, some of this stuff you could use as cover in a landfill. And I know, you know, I'm sure making sense, Scott's company would take it too. I don't know. I like where we're going.
Yeah.
We have a motion to that effect. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Well, I appreciate your patience.
Do you have your directions?
No, that's okay.
Feedback.
That's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Scott.
Well, we're lucky to have Chuck because he's got a lot of the brownfield background as well. So.
Bernadette Donald, you guys met the meeting before last. She coordinates the recycle day events, and so she put together some graphs and that she wanted to present to you guys. So I'm going to go over this. So there's been four events so far. There's pictures from all these except for the Yakult event. And I believe that's Allie. She sat in the canvas picture, so that's awesome. So this is the total participants compared to last year for the event so far. And Washougal will be our next event coming up. So you can see they're kind of about the same. Some, you know, a little higher, some a little lower so far.
And the big difference is 2015, we had household hazardous waste.
Yes.
So these are apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have hazardous waste for the collections this year. So, but people are still showing up to do all the other things.
Yeah.
Some of the events are partnered with like city cleanup events as well. And so those numbers weren't completely separated. You know, so there was like garbage collection events at, I believe, not Yakult. Those are true numbers in Yakult. But Camas and Ridgefield, I believe, had garbage collection.
Well, I went to the Battleground one, and the cars were clear out and around the street and down the block.
Yes.
And they had everything from Grandma's bathtub to, you cannot imagine, they call it large collection, and there were large things there too.
Yeah, I was at that event last year, and it was just insane. That's not a garbage collection event either.
No?
So, because a lot of these events, we have high participation because it's a free garbage collection day that the city puts on. That's not part of our recycle day events. We kind of partner with them, and we do the recycling part. And yeah, that was just astonishing last year. So now without HHW, it'll be interesting how Battleground goes. So a lot of people that came to Battleground were in there for the hazardous waste.
It was amazing how many tires.
Yes. Which, speaking of tires, let's move on to that one actually, because it's interesting. So she put together two graphs. The top one is the participants, and the bottom one is the tire count. So if you see, like for Yakult, for example, 20 people came in with tires, but we got more tires. So that was kind of an interesting
trend. I think you limit the tires to four or something.
It's five, but
it's
there was
five.
Also like, some people get clever with the rules.
I know.
They're like, oh, I brought my buddy.
Yeah.
Those are my buddy's tires, you know, and then they come back and, oh, this is my mom, you know, and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly how she's counting that, but yeah.
Big fans.
Yeah. And then, you know, usually people, you know, they come with a bunch of tires and we tell them, hey, come up at the end of the event. If there's room, go ahead and chuck them in. Because the point of it is to get this stuff out and get it, you know.
Now, do you lease those vans?
The big,
they put the tires and the metal and everything in?
Yeah, they're big, like, dumpster type things that waste collections. Yeah, drop boxes that waste collections.
Well, they had regular vans too, for at least at Battleground.
Huh.
You know, like, less Schwab's great big thing, you know. I don't know if it was his, but they were loading one like he had.
Huh.
Oh, tires.
Nice. So, So she just some stuff that people told her when she was out there in Yakult in particular, that there was a lady that came up that had just a ton of tires, and it was because someone had illegally dumped on her property. And so this was her opportunity, and she had been doing this for like the last 4 years, and she was really excited this year because this was the last of the tires that had been illegally dumped on her property. I've had people tell me that, you know, I just moved into this property and they dug up, I've got a bunch of tires like over by the barn, and I just, we were planting a garden and we found all these tires under the ground. And so they come to these events to get rid of that stuff. So,
well, it's bad for mosquitoes too.
Yeah.
Terrible for mosquitoes. We're kind of conscious of those all of a sudden.
So yeah, participants are lower, but we're getting, except for Ridgefield, we're getting more tires though. So this is block foam. I'm not sure why, but the data wasn't there for Washougal. She was saying.
Oh, it's because the recycling of it was on hold.
Was that the one?
We lost our collection processor.
I thought that was just Hazeldale, but maybe it was Washington.
Hazeldale, yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we on that now?
We are, actually I meant to mention this, it's going to Far West Fibers out in Hillsboro, and we're going to be touring that site May 11th. I don't know if anyone's interested in joining us, city and county and Waste Connection staff. We're going to head out there. We can send that out to folks.
Yeah, please.
It's still marginal at best.
Do you know what they do with it?
Well, they densify it and then it gets sold. Plastic market.
So there's increased participation for the block foam collection. Especially in Canada's a huge jump this year. So, you know, regardless of hazardous waste, people are still coming for the other stuff in large numbers. So that's good. We've also done a lot of more marketing this year, I think, because we're trying to get the message out to go to the transfer stations, and we're pairing that with the Recycle Day event, like info and posters and stuff. So I think maybe part of that is because of that as well.
I'll intercede that I got my Waste Connection bill today, and in it was the Green Neighbors, please take your, you know, added hours at the for the hazardous waste collection.
Great.
It was in today's bill.
Nice. Awesome.
So.
That's Camille on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice to know that it goes all the way around and works, right?
Mm-hmm. We did have 70 folks show up on the first Friday that we were open. Expanded hours, was it 70?
I think it was. It was 49.
So on that first Friday, they had expanded hours. So.
At Central Transfer Station.
Oh, say that. How many people you had on the first Friday?
I
want
to say it was 49.
Maybe it's 50.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
But still, not bad.
Yeah. That's not bad.
And then the second was higher. It was like 70 or something like that.
That means that Mark, the outreach, people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah. So Bernadette wanted to share that, you know, they have some A-frames out there, so I know HHW at the event, and people haven't been coming saying like, you know, take my stuff. No one's been leaving it there. No one's been angry or anything. A few people showed up that are just like, oh, well, that's too bad, but nothing like crazy. Yeah. You know, most people seem to have gotten the message and they're okay with it.
Good job.
So I think it's best, especially since a lot of that, you know, literature, the poster we sent out, it's like, yeah, we're not taking it, but look at all these options you have. So I think it's helpful that that information was paired. But she was saying that she doesn't actually know how many people might have come with it and then left and went somewhere like, to the transfer station to take it. You know, you don't really know that. People might have showed up with it and saw the signs and even were told no HHW and they go, oh, okay. You know, there's not really a count of those people. But no angry people, so that's good.
Nobody hit it in their load.
No. Yeah, and so for the city events, where there's garbage collection, they, Waste Connections, were not accepting any HHW. So none of that, if somebody brought it, and we told them, you know, you're not going to drop it off here, they didn't then chuck it into the garbage. That was not allowed.
The events I've been at, and maybe you have different, they back up their rear load trucks, and then the folks drive in, and then it all is handled. So there's not an opportunity to bury it and just dump and run.
So, do you guys have any questions?
I do. So, I think that's really good news. That was one of the concerns about the household hazardous waste being dropped from that. That's really good. I was worried about the outlying areas, particularly where folks, you know, may have a harder time getting elderly people or whatever. This is a really convenient thing. So good job on the messaging, first of all. And then the other thing, I can send this out, but in the Deflector, March 23rd, there was an article, I don't know if everybody saw that, the center was considering scrapping the event, the recycling event, and they were basically saying, reconsidering the costs associated with its annual recycling day event, considering if it was worth it, and they were saying it's kind of run its course, they don't need to do it anymore. Did anyone see that article?
That was in the Reflector?
Yeah. I can send it out to everyone. And it was kind of startling. I listened to the council meeting audio just to hear the conversation from that decision-making process. They ended up coming back allowing it, but they decided not to fund it or provide any staff.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, but they were basically going to scrap it. And, you know, I was kind of like, have you had that conversation?
What happened with the center is the year before this one, they stopped doing the free trash. And the center is an exception area because they don't have mandatory garbage. So they were getting a lot more household type waste that they didn't want. With Richfield, everyone is subscribed to weekly garbage. So the stuff that's coming in is the old barbecue, you know, the stuff that's making things unkempt in the community. So the center stopped that, and that peeved everyone because everyone likes the free garbage dump day. And then this was the second year. And so I think there's two things going on. There's the whole garbage community event piece that was stopped, and that was great expense that the center had to bear. And then there's our Recycle Day events, which is no cost to the city, because we bear that cost. So and there may have just been some confusion.
Yeah, because the article
in that discussion.
Oh, just the article, you know, it says the center may scrap recycling event, and that's what led me to listen to the audio, and they were talking about specifically the recycling piece, because they didn't, you know, mention, I didn't really hear the garbage piece mentioned, because it had already been eliminated, but they were saying they didn't want to provide staff. It was costing like $2,600 or something for the city to provide staff. I don't know if that was ever.
No, that was their cost when they had the trash day.
Yeah, and it didn't make sense to me that they would sort of have any. Is a recycling event controlled by the city, whether it happens or not, or do
no.
they buy into it?
Well, they buy into it, and with Battleground, they've never done trash days, and we just go out. And we have one helper from the city, and he just volunteers his time.
Okay.
So we have their community events. Sometimes combined with city trash collection days.
I'll send this article out.
Yes, that sounds very interesting. We'll need to follow up on that.
Follow up if you would.
Definitely.
Just to make sure that there's clear communication, because maybe they don't understand all the council decision making process. Maybe we need some clarification. I hate to see it end, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so on that, going into next year, you know, we'll really be looking at like what these events are going to look like next year, you know, after testing it without this HHW, really kind of seeing, you know, what is the needs of these communities and what they're actually option there for recycling at least.
You sure thank her for putting this so that it's so clear.
Yeah.
We do graphs well.
Okay, and I passed around another chart. I just had a few more other points on it for other graphs about scrap metal and freon. Looks like there's a lot more. A lot of them.
It's funny what ends up in your yard. I was out weeding today after coming home from Arizona and finding spring had sprung and there were weeds. And I reached under my arborvita and I found a great big Ford hubcap. Don't know how it ever got there. And I, you know, now got to figure out what to do with a Ford hubcap.
What year?
I don't know. You missed one. Yours.
Anything else, folks? Meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Thank you all. More chips and dips.
Your house for tequila. My author hat on.
But EPA.
It's
100 years.